Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Pod With You.
And also with you.
I'm your host, Suzanne Santo, also known as Suzanne Pizzolatto. Alongside me,
Nick Pizzolatto.
Other host.
Other host. Frequent guest.
Always guest.
Yeah.
You're our permanent guest on Pod With You.
Oh, thank you.
I don't want a pod without you.
Oh, thanks. I don't want you to pod without me.
I don't think people want to hear my lone thoughts.
It's probably not true, but well, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm along for the ride and it gets weird. Well, we were thinking of covering one of our favorite topics, which was our beginning and how we met.
Well, right, because we were discussing artistic beginnings in an earlier episode.
Correct.
And the person who asked about that had also asked about how we started. So we thought we would save the secret origin of our coupling for an episode to be called Beginnings Part 2.
Correct.
And that is this episode.
Right. This is this episode happening now.
But prior to doing the deep dive into how we met, you know, we talk a lot about art and film and music on this show. Mm. And last night we each saw a movie that we agreed was really good and
correct.
Emotionally affected us. So we thought we'd just take a second to give it a shout out and a little review. So that film is Jay Kelly, the Noah Baumbach movie on Netflix starring George Clooney and Adam Sandler. There will be spoilers if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, so,
if you want to be spoiler free, go watch it. Suze and I both recommend it.
Great. Yeah. It's sad to know it went straight to streaming. I feel like this film was so beautifully done. It could have been
that's all
a
Netflix
great
movies.
Theater release.
That's all Netflix movies.
They just don't want us to leave the house.
Well, yeah. I mean, they had another great movie, Train Dreams.
Haven't seen it.
It's very artistic and visual in its narrative. It's based on a Dennis Johnson novella. And that seems like a big screen experience.
Well,
but
and considering
Netflix.
Jay Kelly is, the film is about a very famous movie star and his life story, and it goes through his career arcs, and it just seems like it would have been so spot on to see it in a theater.
Yeah, or when it gets to the ending montage of all those different movie scenes, that would have been great on a big screen. But, you know, nonetheless, that's the Netflix model, and they're the ones paying for it.
Great. Well,
so I think we should be glad that they're paying for movies like this occasionally.
I feel like in regards to giving the synopsis, you're going to do a much better job than I will, and I'll just chime in.
Oh, well, okay. Jay Kelly is about basically a very famous movie actor who is searching for anyone who will come with him to receive this tribute, a kind of lifetime achievement award in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And he initially is not going to do it, but then he sees it as a way to connect with his daughter who's moving away from home because she's going to Europe and having adventures there. So he's going to catch up with her in Italy and get her to come to his tribute.
But really, you know, with that aside, there's a moment in the movie early on where Jay Kelly's character is at a funeral for the director who gave him his first break.
Mm-hmm.
And at this funeral is a fellow acting classmate whom Jay Kelly actually hijacked the audition that his friend was at.
Well,
and
yeah, I don't know if that's a fair way to say it, but yeah, okay. So you're on Team Crudup with that story.
Not really, because he just didn't, that's how fate would have it, I guess.
Right.
And his bitterness is difficult to empathize with because he's married with kids and he has this.
I agree. Well, and there's also the hard truth of like, yeah, buddy, your friend came with you to the audition and he read after you.
Right.
He is not the reason when you auditioned, you did not impress the director.
Right.
The director was off you before your buddy auditioned.
Sure. But, you know, Jay Kelly's has this confrontation with the Billy Crudup character. And I think his name's Timothy. Tim?
Yeah, it's Tim.
And, you know, they go out drinking. The, you know, knives come out. I hate you. You stole my life.
Billy Crudup's character admits at the end of their evening drinking that he always hated him. And that the way he saw things, J. Kelly had stolen his life.
His life, right? Which, again, you know, Timothy was a successful child therapist, married with children, and talked about all the time he got to spend with his family. So, you know, you kind of have these grass is always greener perspectives, especially because you come to learn that J. Kelly's character is just intensely lonely and truly doesn't really have real friends or healthy relationships with his family at all. And, you know, in some ways, this experience and this interaction alters his entire life view and view of himself, because the Timothy character, I think he says, do you even know who you are?
Yeah, he says, is there anybody in there?
Right. And then kind of the rest of the movie, you bear witness to this, you know, vacancy in his person. I mean, he's a great movie star. And that's something later his daughter says to him when he's trying to connect with her.
Yeah.
She said, Dad, you're a terrible father, but you're a great movie star and you make a lot of people happy.
Yeah.
And it was so sad.
She also says, you don't have to worry about me. I'm going to have a good life.
Right.
Just not with you.
Right.
Well, so in that way, the movie is a meditation, I think, on stardom, on time, and
sacrifice.
Certain kinds of sacrifice, I think, and maybe that's one of the movie's points, is that you're going to sacrifice your life for something. And for a lot of people, it's for family, mm-hmm. it's for love, mm-hmm. and for him, it was for movie stardom.
Well,
and at the end, what does he have at the end? He has those movies.
Yeah.
He has those movies that really happened. I really did that for 35 years, mm-hmm. and I'm not close to my daughters. Mm-hmm. And they don't really like me. Mm-hmm. And my closest friend is Adam Sandler, who takes 15% of my income.
Right, his manager.
But at the end of the day, I do have this record. I did do these movies, and that's what his life was for. And the human and resonant part to me is sort of all grows out of what I just said, that notion that, you know, you're going to sacrifice your life for something. Mm-hmm. And I was telling you earlier, my overwhelmingly consistent experience of life from my earliest memory to now has been the acute sense that it was passing, that all my life I have watched my life disappear. And I thought this movie captured something about that really poignantly, because you do have flashbacks into his early days and to these sort of pivotal or formative moments mm-hmm. in his early career. And you see him as mm-hmm. a very selfish, shallow guy.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
And I think that that's actually one of Clooney's sweet spots as an actor, is when he plays somebody shallow and right. selfish.
Well, you know, to the movie's credit too, there's so much depth to understanding the movie star's character. And, you know, he flies his father out to Italy yeah. for this tribute, and you're inundated with the just terrible dad syndrome, and you're just so sad, your heart breaks for him.
It's almost
the father
painful.
Actually leaves before the award ceremony because he's tired and doesn't want to go,
while his son pleading
with him, please dad, please just stay. And he just leaves,
and his dad doesn't even say anything. He just scowls at him and says, bring the car around, I want to go.
Yeah.
And then he's literally chasing his father's car down the road.
It's devastating. No, they really, something else they did in this film that not everybody can do, and I found to be so just rewarding in its execution, was they time jump. And, you know, you watch George Clooney kind of walk through a door, and all of a sudden he's in a portal from his formative years, and it was done so beautifully that it wasn't weird, and it told the story even better, whereas I think a lot of people, when they time jump, it's just bad writing, you know?
Or you're just talking about flashbacks.
Right, they use flashbacks as a crutch.
These flashbacks actually put Clooney as a witness within the flashback.
Correct.
And so I think that helped, and it was pretty elegant.
Right.
But overall, you know, not to go over this too much, I was just grateful we saw something that was made for adults.
Start to finish.
Had a measure of depth and intelligence to it. Mm-hmm. Never insulted anybody. And at the end, I was moved. I thought this film had two of the best last lines of any movie I've seen ever. And that's an achievement, that the whole movie really works up to what are Clooney's character's last lines.
Explain that. This is something actors say when want to do another take.
I wasn't even going to say
what
they were.
You're not going to say it? Just watch it yourself.
Well, now I am. The movie climaxes in Jay Kelly watching his own tribute at this event in Italy. And the tribute is composed of a montage of actual George Clooney movies from his 30 years as a movie star. And it keeps flashing to the character Jay Kelly's face as he watches. He has a memory of his two daughters, and then he corrects the memory in his head. And at the end of the montage of movies, the lights come up, the audience cheers, and Jay Kelly says, "I'd like to go again. I'd really like another." And those are the lines that an actor says when they would like another take, when they don't think they've got it yet and they'd like to try again. And everything the movie does is a
very... But he says it right to camera, too.
Says it right to camera with tears in his eyes.
It's beautiful.
And everything the movie did up until then was leading to those lines. And I'd even say those lines indicate some measure of awareness and growth that he may not have had at the beginning of the movie. But whether he grows at all in the film, I really couldn't tell you. What I could say is that his journey is very human, and that really resonated at the end. I'd like another. I'd like to go again.
I also think that just having seen so much of George Clooney over the years, you know, it was the most like... There was the least amount of George Clooney shtick, like his usual mannerisms and things. He was just, he embodied a different character, and it was noteworthy. I mean, he really
went to
a different level.
That's the best I've seen him be in a film.
I think so too.
And like my other best George Clooney performance is Hail Caesar, which is a comedic.
Did you see the one, not the ancestors.
The descendants.
The descendants.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
Not a fan?
No.
I thought he was pretty good in that.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the movie.
Right.
And he's been good in other movies to me. Like, I've never been a big Clooney fan at all. But, you know, I think Out of Sight is A+. Mm-hmm. I think Three Kings is a great movie.
Sure.
Excuse me. He's really good in Michael Clayton. But I love him in Hail Caesar, and I loved him in
Yeah.
And Hail Caesar and this were the two movies where those are the two performances where I think George Clooney was the best guy for the job.
Yeah.
And most of his other good movies, like, I'd be like, yeah, he did good, but I could have seen a bunch of other guys do good.
No,
too.
He was the best guy for this job.
Yeah, he was the best guy.
And I'm sure it was very parallel to the truth in his own life as a movie star.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he's happily married. He's got two young kids.
I mean,
who knows who's happily married?
Mainly from the volume of stardom. You know, they don't really have too many of those these days that have such a breadth of a career, like so much under their belt.
He's also kind of like, he's in that generation of last movie stars.
Right.
Where we're not really getting more movie stars. Mm-hmm. I mean, at this point, if you want a movie star leading man, about as young as you can go is Ryan Gosling. Who's in his mid-40s.
Right.
And if you...
I don't know. You don't think Glenn Powell's a movie star?
I think when you point to these younger guys, I don't... Those are guys who are in movies.
Right.
They are not movie stars.
Sure.
Movie star is a whole different thing.
Right.
And movie stars existed before every actor put every bit of minutia of their daily lives on social media.
Right.
Movie stars were people you had to go to the movies to see.
Right.
And really, in that regard... you know, you can make an argument for DiCaprio, you can make an argument for Denzel Washington or Tom Hanks, but they've all done stuff that's gone straight to streaming, and the only guy who hasn't is Cruise. So I think of him as the last movie
star. I think
star.
You have a point, though, too, about movie stars aren't on social media. They're not accessible. They're sort of almost abstract at a point. Like they've
that's become, what they're supposed to be. Right, they're right. They're supposed to be reservoirs for the dreams and projections of their audience. Mm-hmm. They're not supposed to be your buddy who you watch pictures of his vacation. And that was one of the reasons people used to tune into the Oscars. Because right. This was the only place you could see all these stars in one
right,
place.
Right.
So that's neither here nor there. It's just Clooney and the character of Jay Kelly represents the twilight, I think, of what Hollywood used to be and what movie stars used to be. And, you know, probably will not be again.
So with that said, it was a beautiful film. I woke up thinking about it. I woke up thinking about Adam Sandler's character, too. He did an incredible
yeah,
job.
Sandler was great. My eyes were wet at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, like I said, the movie so affected me. I bought the 1997 film The Peacemaker this morning on Amazon.
And I
just
because
I was like, oh, I remember that movie. Maybe it's better than I thought it was now that I'm watching it as part of a montage at the end of Jay Kelly.
That's funny that you thought that. And I thought, when was the last time I saw Billy Madison?
Well, so, you know, all congratulations and cheers to the writer-director Noah Baumbach, to George Clooney, and to Adam Sandler. We dug it.
Tip of the hat. Well done, fellas.
Yeah.
Okay, Nick. It's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. What are you talking about?
That's funny. Our 2-year-old last weekend walked up to Nick. And he's sitting there drinking his coffee in the morning, and she shook Nick's hand and said, "Nice to meet you."
Nice
and
to meet you.
Then she came and said it to me, and I was like, "It's great to meet you too, daughter."
She's so formal sometimes.
I don't get it. Well, how we met.
Yeah.
What a story.
The secret origin.
Now, I want to say something because you were talking about life in this way that it's like you missed the moment. It's already happened.
I miss it while it's happening. I already miss it.
See, I've lived my entire life feeling like I'm almost there. I'm almost there. We're so close. I'm almost there. And the only time in my life, and I mean this, that I was like, I'm here, is when we met.
Oh, wow.
And you came into my life. It was like time settled for me then.
Mm.
And you know, it took a minute for me to adjust that with my career. Mm. But when it came to you and our love, it was like, oh, it's here.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's really touching. And my experience of life, in contrast to yours is I'm almost there.
Right.
My experience my whole life from the time I was a kid was always, I'm too late. It's too late. I even put that line in season 3 of my show.
Mm-hmm.
Mahershala's character says, it's always too late. Whatever we do, it's always too late.
So pessimistic.
No, it's just that so often in life you're reacting to something, and by the time you're reacting, it's too late.
That's why you're so cool. See, I react before the thing even happens. And you're just like, you know, hanging back, smoking a cigarette. And, you know, that's why, you know, people are afraid of you.
Nobody's afraid of me.
I don't know about that.
And anybody who says they are is a liar.
Oh, my God. Who I'm going to kill.
Well, look, that was really sweet. And I mean, I would say, too, we're jumping ahead in the story. But I had my own version of that. I mean, I told you, like, a week after we met, I had just gotten out of the shower and I was in my closet, and the weight of the last several years and of other aspects of my life just suddenly hit me all at once, because I was going through these clothes that encompassed like 10 years of my life.
Mm-hmm. Were we going on a date and you were picking out your clothes?
Something like that. And my heart just got really sad because I was thinking about everything I had been through in the last few years, and then the 10 years before that, and the 10 years before that. And I just kind of dropped to my knee in the closet, and I heard, almost apart from my mind, but a voice in my head, a very clear thought that just said, but that's all over now. Suzanne's here. You know, and I remember telling you about that. And Anyway, let's tell people how we met.
Made me tear up. Well, I, Suzanne Santasuso Pizzolatto, was living in Los Angeles. And at the end of 2020, which was a very pivotal year, I had decided to move to Austin, Texas. The year was transformative and pivotal in the ways that were so profoundly good for me. And I had spent, you know, I had all these exciting things for my career that were, you know, on my schedule that I was excited about that took precedence over everything else. And when it was taken away and I was alone with myself, I spent the year grieving the things I thought I was never going to get, which was great love and family. And so in conjunction with this heaviness, I also had optimism and faith. And so when I moved to Austin, I just wanted to live in a better place. I wanted to live around better people.
Right.
Because LA was just, it was already, I mean, it's been a dumpster fire for a long time. And yes, of course, we have some nice friends there, but it is a place, it is a churning cauldron of unhappiness at the end of the day for a lot of people. And a lot of people are in denial about it.
A lot of degeneracy, too.
It's a lot of degeneracy. It's a lot of broken dreams. It's a lot of living outside your means. It's, you know, unless you are like exorbitantly wealthy, living in Los Angeles is a slog.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, living in Los Angeles was pretty good for me.
Of course.
And yeah. Like, I don't mean to go down.
This, I'm poo-pooing it pretty hard.
And there used to be some things to really love about LA.
Yes.
Those things have gotten much slimmer and far between now. But I had moved 6 months before you.
Right.
So in January of 2020, I got full custody of my daughter. And then lockdowns happened and the riots that summer, and we had the mayor encouraging people to come out and protest. But when you're done, go back inside because there's a deadly pandemic on. And my daughter really needed family and she needed a lot of care. So I made the decision to move closer to family and to come back to Austin, where I had spent a few years in my early 20s and enjoyed it. And that meant, so for me, I had to walk away from a lot of stuff.
Sure.
I walked away from jobs. I walked away from my show. I walked away from my sort of position in the industry. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't know if or when it would come back or what I would have at the end of the day. But I knew one way or another, I'm done with this. And whatever's next is going to have to be better. And it's going to have to be more solid.
Right. You know, you had a really excellent Facebook or Instagram post when you moved to Austin. And I remember like when I first met you and I was like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And it's a picture of you looking, you know, chiseled and gorgeous. And you said, it's not me, it's you, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Or Los Angeles, it's anyway, not me, it's you.
Anyway, goodbye.
Goodbye.
It's not me, it's you.
You know, sorry, Los Angelians, you know, if you're there and you're loving it, good for you.
Yeah.
But there, you know, you can't deny there are a quality of people there that are, just a different.
Also breed. Some wonderful people.
Also wonderful
but,
people.
But I do think what you're talking about is because it has been so centered around the entertainment industry and around either having lots of money or either having no money
mm-hmm.
and not much in between.
Sure.
There is this psychic strata of desperation that permeates Los Angeles.
But you have to factor in the way that place is run by the government. Like when I left, it was so fucking dangerous. I was chasing people out of my yard all the time. You know, you couldn't really walk down the street in a way that was healthy or safe, you know, like.
Well, I'm going to wrangle this back in a little bit.
Yeah. Okay.
Long story short, we left LA for Austin. I got here in September 2020 and you got here in February 2021.
I did.
Okay.
And I traveled during this snowpocalypse, which is, you know, that big freeze that hit Austin where a lot of people died and it was just
it was Central Texas in general.
It was Central Texas, but you know, as a nearly 20 year veteran of touring, I'd never seen anything like this. It was apocalyptic. Like, there were cars, like hundreds of cars abandoned on the road, you know, spun out because people couldn't drive in the snow. Like, there would be miles and miles of signs that said no gas, like just no groceries, no water. It was wild. And, you know, it took me, you know, an extra 5 days to get to the city. And by the time I got here, I was like, should I go back? Like, what did I just walk into? And, you know, I didn't know anybody. I had two friends I knew here, but I was just kind of betting on myself. I was betting on a new beginning, a different flavor, and hoping that it would be closer to my values as a Midwesterner. And, you know, the South has, we've got some similarities.
Yeah.
And so I dug in, you know, I got this little house in East Austin that was a dream for me because it was like three bedrooms with a yard and, you know, what I paid for a one bedroom apartment in Los Angeles. Like, I had all this space and I was just so excited. And one of my musician friends brought me out to a show, and which I was amazed, by the way, that people were out not wearing masks. It was awesome. And reconnected with another person, and then an old friend who invited me to a dinner party, which I was thrilled just to talk to people. And so I went to this dinner party. I was here for about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And did you want to say something?
Yeah, well, so you came to this dinner party. I knew your old friend, and I was out with another friend. We were just out having a good time, and my friend had said, hey, you know, I told him we'd stop by his dinner party, and I said, why? We're having a great time. We're the life of the party. What are you talking about? I don't want to go.
Ladies everywhere.
And I was like, I don't want to go to a dinner party. It's a bunch of couples over there, which I think it was.
I was the only non-couple person.
And, and so he was like, well, look, let's just stop by. We'll have a drink and then we'll come right back out.
Wait.
And so I was like, okay, everybody stay here.
Right.
We'll be right back.
We'll be right back. Yeah. Who's everybody? Do you have some lines in the water? Some ladies? You did. You dog.
It was hunting season.
Oh my God. Well.
Anyways.
Who do I have to go back in time to kill? Okay.
Anyway.
So side note, you know, at this dinner party, everybody's just effervescent and the food was incredible. And I'm, you know, telling everybody about myself, who I am. I just got here from Los Angeles. I had also made a vow that I would not date for 9 months. I'm not being distracted by anyone. I don't want anything to do with anybody. And it felt so good. I'd actually never felt as good in those, you know, couple of months I got in before I met you, that I'd made that choice for myself just to take better care of my heart without any kind of interference. And so I told everybody at this dinner,
you know,
that I'm like, I'm not dating anybody for 9 months. I'm here to just build my life, focus on my career. And okay, flash forward to after dinner.
I think it's funny that
drinks are flowing.
Like, you have to realize your privilege as a beautiful woman to say, I'm not seeing anyone for 9 months. Like, most people don't get the option to say, I would see people, but I don't want to. They're like, I've been single for 9 months.
I don't know about that.
Anyway.
I think lots of people can date, but I was, you know, cloud nine.
Having fun with all these new people. And then me and my good friend Chris come by. And I remember walking through the party, saying hi to people, but going straight to the kitchen to make a drink. And I made a drink and saw Suze and just made a beeline for her. And I just said, hey, I'm Nick. And she goes, hi, I'm Suzanne. And we shook hands and stared into each other's eyes. And I held her hand for like 8 seconds while we shook hands. So like, we said, hi, I'm Nick. Hi, I'm Suzanne. And then we're still holding hands and we're staring into each other's eyes. And it's gotten a little weird.
Disarming.
It's gotten a little weird. And Suze broke it first by asking me if I had a black eye.
Which he did.
Which I did.
I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? He's got black eyes. He's holding my hand. He's still touching me.
Yeah. And so.
He smells great.
That was a moment. Other people in the kitchen noticed too. Like everybody who was around us noticed it. And then I, so that is actually the moment to me that, that everything began. And it's nice that we don't have to wonder about that.
No, of course.
Is it, no, no, everything started.
It's the moment we shook hands.
The moment we shook hands. And I was aware that something had just altered in me. That like,
right.
Something on a higher dimensional plane had just resonated. Like there was a tuning fork, you know, on a higher mathematical plane that, that just sounded. And I was feeling its reverberations. And, you know, I can get into this later, but I would even come to realize that I had a good meditation practice back then. And for about a month leading up to meeting you, I was having visions of you when I meditated. Mm. And I couldn't figure out what it was. I thought it was Stevie Nicks or something.
And yeah, you said it was some witchy woman.
Yeah, it was like some witchy woman playing a guitar with long red hair. And I thought it was Stevie Nicks. And then I started listening to Stevie Nicks music and it would get me really like choked up right, and sentimental. Right. And I couldn't figure out why because I had no connection to her music whatsoever. Like right. It didn't take me back to a memory or anything, but it was very affecting to me. So then we meet and shake hands and it's a metaphor, but it's also entirely correct to say time stopped.
Yes.
Like time Absolutely. Stopped. Everything else in that kitchen went dark and there was a spotlight on the two of us.
Well, and you know, I of course was struck in that moment. But I was also like, oh no, 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 no. You got to stick to your plan. You got to stick to your plan. This is crazy. He's scary. you feel that like that ocean of energy, like, holy shit, you know? And so, you know, we shook hands and then released our grip and kind of, you know, wandered around. There's probably like 20 people there maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
And so, but you know, a few hours are going by at this point.
But
and
I talked to you.
Of course. But you know, I was always aware of wherever you were in the house or outside. And, you know, at one point there was musicians there. So we started playing.
Right.
And I remember being really, really happy that you were in the room.
Uh-huh.
Cause I was singing to you,
uh-huh.
You know, I wanted you to hear me sing. And it was a moment.
Well, I remember hearing you sing and I remember like, kind of falling back against the wall a little bit because I had no idea who you were and I hadn't heard any of your music. But hearing you sing was when I like very clearly thought to myself, I'm not leaving here until that person makes out with me. But, you know, before you sang, for whatever reason, it's not my typical modus operandi. I was going hard in the paint. I was talking to you, but like the thing that happened was as I spoke to you, I enjoyed it more and more and more. Like, we were making each other laugh a lot
and
you were making me laugh, which really impresses me. but that's what I remember. It was, you were really making me laugh. And we were being very cute together. And I was pretending I could read palms so I could like hold your hand.
This was after I sang.
That was after
we were outside.
Okay.
We were outside on like a picnic table. And, you know, Nick and I, he just kept touching me, you know, like he was touching my hand and like, it's like, you know, electrical shock.
I was doing all the dark psychology tricks.
Right. Sure,
I was
Oh,
if I make her laugh, I'm going to touch her elbow. So she's grounded in my touch.
Nick the wizard.
When she feels that surge of joy that comes with laughing.
And, you know, I was getting pretty lit too. Like we were pretty tipsy. And I feel like in all fairness, when I got up and said, it was so nice to meet everyone. I've got to get going. It's getting late.
But I wasn't even in the room. I was like on the other side of that party or something.
No, you were there. I remember.
I felt like I had to cross the room to go confront
you. No, you were at the picnic table. We were all outside. And a part of me, I think.
Wanted me to stop you?
Yes.
Yeah. That's what I figured.
And you did.
That's what I figured.
And so this is so romantic. Nick, you take this next one. It was your line.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, so
I'm saying my goodbyes.
I thought I'd been doing really well with this woman all night. And the thing was, is whatever had happened to us when we shook hands, I knew it was mutually recognized. Like I knew you had seen it too. And then we had fun talking to each other. And after you sang, I was really flirting with you. But so she gets up and says, well, look, it was really great to meet everybody. I got to get home. Thank you so much. And then I went and caught up with her by the door. And I said, whoa, wait, what are you doing? You're just leaving? And she goes, I have to go.
It's late.
Yeah, it's late. Like, almost said it to me like she was angry.
I was. I was like, I can't. I know what we're going to do. We can't do this. I made a vow. 9 months. I'm not dating anybody.
And I said, so you go, it's late. And I said, well, don't you think we should do something about this? And you go, what? And I go,
come on.
What do you mean?
Like, you
this.
Went, come on.
And I was like, come on, this, you and me, shouldn't we do something about this? And you're like, I have to go. And I go, well, why don't you just take a walk with me? Let's just take a little walk. We'll just go for a walk right outside. Will you just go for a walk with me? She's like, okay, fine. And so then we just go for a little walk outside, but she took off her high heels. And as soon as we started walking, we were holding hands.
Immediately holding hands.
Yeah.
We started walking.
And that was sweet. I remember we were walking through wet grass.
Yeah.
And it was sweet. And
then Nick said, I really want to kiss you.
Yeah. But
and
we
I
had said something before.
And
that.
I said, well, I'm not dating right now. And you said, I didn't say I wanted to date you. I just want to kiss you.
All true.
And I was like, you asshole. And then I kissed you.
Yeah.
And we kept kissing and kissing and kissing. And at one point, yes, Nick.
Well, okay. So we kissed outside.
For a while.
And that for a while. And that was fun. And we were in the wet grass.
And it was cold.
In the moonlight. And then we went back inside and we started making out against your friend's wall. And you were wearing a leather jacket with studs on it. And so we scratched up the whole wall with your leather jacket.
It was a white wall.
It was a white wall.
It looked like someone.
It looked
had
like
been
two
attacked.
Animals. It looked like two animals got in a fight on the wall.
There were fingernails.
There were fingernail marks clawing up the wall, and they weren't mine.
We don't know that. It could have been anybody's fingernails.
I was biting my nails then.
That is gross. Nails. You shouldn't. It's a terrible habit.
Well, I don't do it anymore.
Lies.
So then we made out against the wall for a while.
In front of people. And I'd just been like, I just got here. I'm not dating anyone. This guy walks in and I'm all,
No, that was hilarious. That all these people you just told, I'm not dating anyone for 9 months.
I was so embarrassed.
You're suddenly against the wall. I know. That's why you had to marry me, was so everybody would think you
reason.
Were right. And so then we made out against the wall for a while. And then you were going to go home. But you were like, well, you can ride home with me, but then you got to get an Uber.
Yeah, you're not coming inside.
Yeah, you're not coming inside. Not and coming I was yet. Like, okay. And I remember yelling to my friend Chris, hey, I'm going with her.
And, oh, my God.
And
we get to my house.
So we're having fun on the ride to your house. Then we get to your house, and you're like, well, you want to come in for a drink? And I said, sure. And
just a drink. And, you know, nobody's taking their clothes off.
No.
We're not doing that.
She made that clear to me, which... You know, okay.
Well, the clothes.
This woman's already said a lot of things in the course of the night that I've been able to get to break through. So,
well, the clothes did stay.
Yeah,
on.
They did.
Okay,
they did.
But one of the coolest things and the most beautiful aspects of this evening, aside from how much we talked and laughed and had a wonderful time and making out. We were staring at each other in
yeah.
these long moments of silence, just looking into each
that
other's
eyes. That was happening
eyes.
Before we got to your house. Like
at the party?
Yeah, at the party when we were kissing.
Oh, yeah.
You did it too. But so I do want to stress that we were talking a lot.
A lot.
And we were laughing a yes. lot. There was like a lot of, like we were both being uber charming.
Well, it was just magic.
Yeah,
it was. Just like.
It was like we were just writing something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but we did this thing where we just stared into each other's eyes for like 5 minutes at a time, no joke, in silence. And it was amazing. Because the longer we stared, the deeper it went. It wasn't like you hit a wall or something. And it was like,
and
we
those were,
just, were
my, I've, now I'm here moment. Like that was like. We're almost there. We're almost there. We're here.
Yeah. And well, I definitely knew something was happening. And staring into your eyes like that was, you don't even understand how unusual that is for me.
Me too.
No, I mean, I don't make eye contact for long with anybody. Because in my life, I've found if I hold eye contact too long, it comes off as aggressive. And it unsettles people.
So
I just don't do it much. But with you, we just stared into each other's eyes. And the longer we did it, the deeper it went. Mm-hmm. And there was no bottom. But as you said, it was pretty PG, PG-13. And eventually, I had to go.
Around a lot of dry humping.
Around 5 in the morning. and I remember, I took an Uber home and I got home right before the sun was coming up, and my aunt saw me the next morning in the kitchen because she had heard the garage open and like heard when I got home. And so she found me making coffee and she goes, "Did you have a good time last night?" And I just had a grin on my face that I wasn't aware of. And I was like, "You know, I did."
No,
I
didn't
really,
she
really
say,
did.
What are you smiling about?
First, she said, "Did you have a good time last night?" And I go, "You know, I really, really did." And she goes, "What are you smiling about?" And I almost bit my lip. I go, "I think I met somebody."
We've often talked about if for some horrifying reason we just never talked after that night, or like you never called me, or you didn't leave your necklace at my house, or I would never be the same. The rest of my life, I would have wondered what could have been, what I was supposed to do with such intimacy, you know? But you did call.
Yeah. But I mean, look, for me, it would have been, you know, if just for whatever reason, it just didn't happen. Or you were like, "Well, look, that was a really fun night, but I'm not dating anyone for 9 months.
So just friends."
I'm not dating anyone for 9 months. I think I would have been looking for that, you know,
absolutely.
And like, I probably wouldn't have accepted anything other than that feeling, but I had gone 45 years without having that feeling. So I couldn't be sure I would ever have it again. Mm-hmm. So I probably would have just been haunted. But as it happened, I did leave a crucifix that meant something to me at your house.
Did you do it on purpose?
I did not do it on purpose. I'm not like that.
You left your jewel too.
Yeah. If I want to see you again, I'll say I want to see you again. I'm not going to fucking leave something at your house. I was actually wondering, like, am I going to hear from her again? Like, should I even message her? Because
I messaged you first. Because
she did say that thing about, I don't want to date anybody. And then I thought, you know, I don't play games temperamentally. Like, I'm just not into it.
Mm-mm.
But you did text me.
Can I tell you this?
Yeah.
So we met on a Saturday. And that Sunday, a dear friend of mine was in Austin on her baby moon. She was 7 months pregnant. And I was thrilled to see her, but I also felt like a bad friend because I went to bed at 5 or 6 in the morning and I was meeting her at like 10 and I was just a wreck. You know, I was so hungover and exhausted, but I was also like riding this wave of excitement. You know, I was just charged, and I meet my friend and we're at this really beautiful like spa resort outside of Austin, and I'm still new here, so the views are kind of like blowing my mind. And we were out by the pool, and honestly, I don't know if it was the same cologne that you have or if it was just spiritual or what. And I'd showered, okay, so I didn't, you know, your musk wasn't on me, but I could smell you on the wind. I could smell what you smelled like, you know, the night before. And it was bizarre. And I wasn't being weird. What did I say? I just texted you and I was like, I can.
No, it was really sweet because it also made me feel good about you. Mm-hmm. Like, good for you. Good for you, like, reaching out and telling you that. Oh, you just texted me. You said, "I keep smelling you everywhere."
And once I sent that, I was like, "God, that's weird. What if he thinks I'm a fucking weirdo?" You know, like, oh my God. What if I just blew up the whole thing? He's like, "I can't, that girl's
No, I said, and I said something cute back, like, you know, that just means I'm in your head or something.
I was just like, I remember as soon as I sent it, I was like,
but
and
I asked,
like, just like, you know,
I think I wrote
you
back right away.
I think so.
I think I wrote you back right away. I was so happy you'd texted. And then I asked you if, you know, hey, when you get home, would you check your couch and see if this crucifix is there? It means a lot to me. And when you got home, you found it and sent me a picture of it. And then I said, could I come by tomorrow around 6 to pick it up? And you said, sure, that's fine. And I said, could I also take you to dinner when I come by? And you said, I'd love that.
I did.
And so then we had the rest of Sunday and Monday to think it over.
It was torture. Do we text a lot then? Or I don't think we did. Okay.
No. So it was like all Monday we didn't hear from each other, to where I was just, hey, just making sure we're on for dinner.
Well, yeah, that's right. It was it was that formal. And the only, like, the 2-3 days tops that we were ever formal, unless we've had a fight since.
Right.
But we, you know, all my stuff was still in boxes. And it was cold. It was like, you know, in the maybe 40s. And I took a shower and I was like getting my outfit together for my date. And my fucking hair dryer broke and my hair was sopping wet. And I was so embarrassed. Like I was like trying to towel off, but that was not the look I was going for my first date with you. And what I love is you came to my door. You didn't like pull up and beep. You came to the door.
Your expectations are too low.
Well, you know, people are weird. You came to the door, and as soon as I opened the door, you just walked in and planted one on me, and we just smooched. And I remember being like, okay, all right.
Now this is happening.
We're kissing. Yeah. We're kissing again. And we got in the car, and we went to a restaurant called Commodore here in Austin. Mm-hmm. And when we checked the car at valet, this is something I remember so vividly too, is that we got out of the car and you just grabbed my hand like you claimed me. Mm. And we walked into the restaurant holding hands, but like a power couple,
yeah,
or something. Like it wasn't
like,
gingerly.
Felt,
it was
like 10 feet tall walking in together.
It was beautiful. And just like to touch you again after these 2 days of what the fuck happened on Saturday? Like what am I going to do? And by the way, I could not eat. I could not sleep. I was, my body was like vibrating, you know, and holy crap. I mean, it was as good as any first date could go. I mean, it was such a blast.
I say it was one of the all time great first dates in world history.
I wish I could go back in time.
I would.
When I die, just to relive.
I would like to just watch that date.
It was
I don't even have to
be
in it.
It was just gorgeous.
I would like to be at the table next to us, because we were sitting across from each other and we were so happy to be together and we were so excited and we were talking and laughing and just kept cracking each other up. I had some good lines. She kept making me laugh, and you know, you're a beautiful woman, and that's just unusual. That's unusual.
I think this means I had some good lines too.
Yeah, you did. And so I said, you know, you've got the personality of a much less attractive woman. And you looked confused, and I was like, no, it's a compliment. But we'd been having a great time, and the sweetest moment came when you said, I know you're not supposed to do this, but I really like you. I can't stop thinking about you. And I said, I looked up Libra man and Aquarius woman, and I don't even fucking believe in astrology. And so we both laughed about that. And she goes, so you're Libra, when's your birthday? And I said, October 18th. And this is in March.
This date was in March.
Yeah. And I said, October 18th. She goes, cool. And leans forward and goes, so what do you want to do for your birthday? And I laughed and I thought that was great. And then she moved everything off one side of the table and stretched her arm out to hold my hand. And soon after that, you just came around and we were same siding at the table.
Which is how we eat in every restaurant
we
go to.
Yeah, we still sit on the same side at a table. And, you know, whatever else happened that night, we closed down the restaurant. And, like, The wait staff was putting up chairs while we were making out in our booth.
It was so fun.
Yeah, and it was really fun. We went back to your place and, you know, hung out and
kissed.
Made
out with our clothes on again.
Yeah, kissed and made out. And this was really sweet, too. You asked, like, well, you know, are you doing anything tomorrow? And I was like, no, I'm just working a little and hanging out. You want to get together? And she's like, yeah. Like, you know, I just have a couple things to do in the morning. And I was like, cool. And so, and you said, so like 10 a.m.? And I was like, sure. And so we were up all night on this date. And then I got to see you the next day at 10 a.m. And we went out to my back house. And we just talked and stared. And I can't emphasize this enough. And stared into one another's eyes for what seemed like hours. Like, we just kept doing it. It was like we would talk and talk until words lost all their power.
Yeah.
And then we would stop talking. And I remember on this date and for several others after, one of the things we talked about most was what was happening to us. Like, what was happening to
like,
us.
Like, I don't know. I just like, oh, God, you're so amazing. And like...
No, but it was like, I've never felt like this before. Have you felt like this before? And I was like, no, I can honestly say I haven't. And well, what is happening? And I was like, I don't know. And, you know, and I remember there was one, it was either this day or the day after, because we kept doing this every day. You said, I've done a lot of cool things. Like, this is the coolest thing that's ever happened.
I did say that very early on.
And I said, yeah, this is the coolest thing that's ever happened to me too. You know, when I think about it. And it was just glorious.
Well, then there was also these very, very, like, you couldn't explain how things were happening, like otherworldly. We were having the same dreams.
Yeah. Oh, let me add this. So when I went to pick you up for our first date, I noticed Suze's house number was 1208. And in season 3 of my TV show, True Detective, the detective who has Alzheimer's finds the missing girl living at 1208 Allegra Lane. And I had made that address because Allegra was my daughter's name and 1208 is her birthday. But in my story, the lost man finds the lost woman at 1208 and the lost woman shows him where he is. And so there was a lot of kismet. In that I was like, are you kidding? Her house is even 1208.
So,
and then
we're hanging out at
we're hanging out at your house, mm-hmm. and you were playing music through your phone, and you were like, oh, you can put on some different music.
The same record had played 3 times because we were
just talking.
We were standing in my kitchen. We were drinking bourbon. We weren't even sitting down. We were standing, and the same, I think it was the Black Keys record, had played 3 times. That's how long we stood and just talk. And you said, do you mind if I change the music? And I was like, oh my God, not at all. Here's my phone.
Hands me her phone, but it was locked. And I said, oh, it's locked. And I handed it back to her. And she goes, well, I don't care if you have my code, which I like. And she told me her phone code. And I was like, get out of here. And I gave her my phone. And I said, put in that phone code. And we had the same phone code. So I felt like there was some sort of...
Which is like a 1 in 16 million or something crazy
like
chance.
It's not like a 1234 phone code.
No.
And I did feel like there was like... In the world of magic and manifestation, there was some kind of mathematical gematria happening. Where
what's that word?
It's a form of numerology that has magical correspondences.
Gematria?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So, you know, like when you look at Kabbalah and stuff, they all have these numbers corresponding to different. So I felt like there was messaging coming through from somewhere. But, you know, in the main, what was happening those first few days while we tried to figure out what was happening to us was we both very much had the sense that we were being carried by and participating in something that was beyond the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
That there was you and there was me, but this other thing happened when you and me got together.
Right.
This third thing, and it was so big, mm-hmm. and it was so powerful. Uh-huh. Like all we could do was kind of hold on to each other while it took us away, right? And so now, if this sounds like bliss, it actually was. It is. It's all I know of bliss in this life, actually. But me being who I am, I immediately start to think I'm mentally ill. Like I remember laying in bed with you that first week, and I was staring up at the ceiling, and I was literally thinking, there's something wrong with me. Like I am having some kind of a manic episode. I didn't know I had those, and but I'm having that. Yeah. But I'm having a manic episode. Right. And I, nothing I do can be trusted right now. Mm-hmm. It's very important that I don't sign any contracts. but I was thinking just like as a 45-year-old man who's lived a life, I was like, you know better than this. You know better than this. This is insanity. This is crazy. And I'm just thinking this to myself while I stare at the ceiling, and Suze rolls over and tells me, we don't need time to validate these emotions. And I was like, okay, great. Now she's reading my mind. Everything's healthy here, I'm sure.
I think I said it a little softer than that. Well, yeah, you did. But still, it was...
But you also said it directly.
Yeah.
You said it like, I'm making a statement here. Not, you know, hey, we don't need time to validate our emotions. It was direct. So things like that kept happening. And
I was scared too. You know, in those ways that like, God, if this went away, I don't know what would happen to me. I don't know
like, this
how
is so
I would
dangerous.
Pick up all the pieces
this
that would
is so
shatter.
Yeah.
It was dangerous, but it was also courageous because we knew something that we couldn't explain, and we just captured it and kept cultivating it. And, you know, like, by the way, bliss or no bliss, we had to work our asses off.
Oh yeah, but that all comes later.
To evolve later, you know, and to be, you know, to garner the strength that we have.
No, and
but these beginning few weeks and months, yeah, I mean, it was like
that was the most magical period of my entire life.
I remember my father was scared.
Yeah,
he was like, "Oh my God, I like, she's so, you know, he didn't want me to get heartbroken, like all of these things." Because I called my parents and I was like, I met the love of my life. And they're like, okay.
I remember hearing you on the...
You've been there for 3 weeks.
I remember hearing you on the phone with somebody after we'd been together a week. And you were like, no, he's the love of my life.
I told everybody. So, every single person.
And I overheard it and I was like, is she crazy? Maybe she's mentally ill.
I couldn't have a conversation
maybe every time she meets a man, she says, I met the love of my life.
No.
And, you know.
No,
and
never said it in my life.
But it was so dangerous. Like, that's what I was thinking that day in the bed was I was like, oh, my God, it's been like 3 days and this woman could destroy me. Like,
you said I love you the first week we were together.
Yeah. I said it first.
You did. You did.
And then I had to wait a day.
It was a day.
You can argue with me all you want, but I remember, and it was
a
day.
That's true. I feel like
it's 100% true. But I think the context of when I said I love you.
Wow.
I think the people want to hear it. So anyway, so this is something you were just remarking on this, but it is very useful to me to remember this period in my life when I met you, and not just because it felt so wonderful, mm-hmm. but I felt a seismic shift in my life when I met you.
Oh my God, yeah.
I was aware I had been on one timeline most of my life, and then I met you, and I knew that whatever happens after this, we're in a new timeline.
Yeah.
We're this is
that's that we've this is arrived. A this we're
is
here.
This is a AS period after Sue's period. But what I really love is that in such a cynical age, when we had every reason to doubt and be cautious, mm-hmm. that third thing between the two of us, we answered it with honor and with honesty. Mm-hmm. Like, what I loved is we were completely honest with each other right from the jump, and neither of us tried to disguise what we were feeling.
I don't know if that would have been possible.
Yeah, I don't know, but... It would have been damaging. I think it would have been damaging if somebody had played any kind of games or, you know, I think it would have, I think if we had met it with anything but the naked vulnerability mm-hmm. we met it with,
yep.
I don't know that it would have been so magical. But we met that thing where it demanded we meet it, which is
right.
which is this third thing, this elevated existence.
Yeah.
It's telling us, you're going to have to come up here and meet me. I'm not going to lower myself down to any.
No, and like you said earlier, there were so many kismet not coincidences. There was just magic.
Yeah, there was just a lot of magic.
A lot of magic. And what I recall so vividly was the first at least 3 weeks, I couldn't sleep. I could barely eat because it was like the cells of my body were trying to calibrate to this energy that was just like overwhelming. And it was like, you know, I had to calm down. You know, and I couldn't. I was too excited. It was the most exciting thing I'd ever seen and experienced in my life by a landslide. And it was beautiful. And it's like I said, it was like, I'm almost there. We're almost there. Almost there. Oh my God, we're here. It's fucking here.
Yeah.
And, you know, 36 years old, believing in great love. You know, I think I told you this. This is funny, but in 2019, when I was in Ireland playing with Hozier, I'd had this really vivid dream, and it was so vivid, and I like woke up in the middle of the night, like terrified. And I was like, in the dream, it was me and these other women, and I feel like in the dream we were like witches or something, but we were all being killed. Like one by one, just killed off. And it was brutal and really, really scary. And they were like, by like, you know, some kind of dark creatures, a male force of sorts. And all of a sudden this like knight or this almost like a warlock in a hood.
Positive masculine figure though.
Positive masculine figure just appears, and just his mere presence made all these, you know, low caste evil things just die off just by the presence of this energy. And I'd never forgotten that dream, and I wrote it down vividly because I was so confused by it, and it felt pertinent. Like it felt like it was a signal of something. And then when I met you.
You told me about that on our first date.
Did I?
You did.
Was it our first date?
The restaurant date.
So this is like, you know, two years later.
Yeah, you told me about that after our restaurant date.
Right, okay.
When we were making out at your house.
Okay.
You told me, like, I had this dream, and you told me about it, and then you said, I think that might have been you.
And like, it just makes sense metaphorically. Or spiritually.
But then, like, literally, my presence does make a lot of parasites go
away.
You
did. I've had a lot of that in my life. And, you know, one of the great gifts of our love and relationship and life together is that those things aren't in my life anymore. And, you know, I really did get to step into the fullest version of myself and expand because I'm with you, because we have the space together. But yeah, that dream, it's just funny how sometimes you have these moments where things make sense.
Well, it's funny that like you had that thing and you were like, I think that was you. And I was like, you know,
having these dreams,
I do these meditations. And I was like, and I got really good at it during lockdowns where like I could get into a trance state and I could do 40 minutes meditating, easy. And subconscious visions would start to arise. And I told you, I was like, I've been, and it was even written down in my journal after I met Suze. Like I have written evidence that I was experiencing this, that I kept seeing this like witchy rocker woman, and she, and it would affect my heart so much when I saw her in these meditations. Like I didn't know who that was, but I would yearn so badly. And so then I started listening to Stevie Nicks music just because I couldn't. I wanted a way to relate to that vision, and I couldn't find one. Mm-hmm. And then her music would make me very sentimental and very emotional because it was keying on this image that had risen from my subconscious and just kept affecting me so much. And then I could tell you, like, well, I think that was you. I think I was dreaming about you. And the way I experience time, I entirely believe that you can feel the future before it happens. I think when a significant event is approaching, it's like plucking a piano string farther down the line. You can still feel the reverberations from where you are. And I really came to believe that I had been dreaming about you right before I met you. And it was as magic and as glorious and as beautiful as we make it sound. But, you know, just for anybody who wants a slight dose of realism, there was a lot of real life to get through.
Absolutely.
You know, like, we both had to adjust our lives. We both had to adjust our behaviors and what we were doing and what we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And align with each other. But I said this early on, and I've continued to find it to be true, that every way I've had to change or adjust for this relationship only made me more myself. It didn't make me less myself. And it only ever pushed me towards a better version of myself. And so in that way, I really did feel that this love and this relationship, this third thing between the two of us, was a road back to myself. Because, you know, I mean, we can say I've been through some shit, and especially in the years leading up to you.
Sure.
And I had played a lot of different roles, and there was something where I was so purely myself, unguarded and also undisguised with you,
right?
That I reconnected to myself and I found the self that I had always been, but that got covered up by duty and circumstance and
wounds,
whatever.
Yeah. Same. I mean, I can honestly say the same. Like, and we've talked about this, you know, a few times about the versions of ourselves that we had to be before we met each other. You know, I was so much more masculine because I had to be, you know, and in ways that like made it lonely as a woman, you know.
Sure.
And you've given me this. I mean, there, you've got enough masculinity for fucking 10 men. So I can kind of, you know, clock out there.
Yeah, for sure.
that's probably good.
Alternatively, you know, I'm not the most feminine person, but like I needed that energy. And I really, really understood the meaning of when the woo-woo people say things like divine masculine and divine feminine. I didn't know what that was until you.
Same.
And then I was like, oh, and right. I raise her up and she raises me up. And
yeah.
It's just.
But, you know, masculinity doesn't mean that you don't have extreme depth of emotion, because you do.
No, and I'm a sensitive artist. And I cry all the time.
And I think that's where, like, you and I both have this nice flow. Like, if you were just all stone wall or something, there's, you know, we're going to be missing out.
You'd probably still enjoy that.
I don't think so. I need your softness. And like, but we have that in a good balance, in the way that, like, I'm still tough.
Yeah,
you know.
Are. I mean, you'd have to be, honestly,
but
to be
like,
with me.
But the femininity I've had the great blessing to access with our love, especially as a mother and as a wife. Like, I love to be your wife.
Thanks. I love you being my wife.
It is so powerful, you know, in like the sanctity of what we believe in and what we cherish. And, you know, I was listening to one of our old podcasts, because I was talking about the power of marriage. I'm like, marriage is so powerful. And you're like, if you're with the right person.
Yeah.
Which is so true, because you could be totally fucked and not in a good place. But
no, you could be in
a
terrible
place. This one, you know, in a lot of ways, we got married before we had a lot to work through.
No, we got married before we had figured a lot of stuff out. And I, you know, maybe these are stories for other podcasts, but we've also had some of the absolute worst fights in the history of men and women fighting.
Horrible fights. Like, you wouldn't believe
it. No, just absolutely. Like, and that's, I mean, that's a lesson of
playing dirty too.
That's a lesson of, well, I, you know, that's, man, if you're fighting, you're fighting. Like, the thing is to win. I don't know if there's a rule book somewhere.
Not our preferred brand of communication.
No,
let's be honest.
Not at all.
But
it was also a good lesson in like, this is what that giant energy turns into.
Sure.
If you
Well, we're Italian too.
If you misuse it though, or you don't honor it correctly, like it'll turn on you and it'll make you forget everything. But those early days, it was magic, and I'm so grateful that we can always look back on them, because I still look back trying to figure out what happened, because I just have that storyteller logician's thing where...
Oh, we forgot to mention the vision board.
Oh, that's yours. You had a vision
board. Well, I might have talked about this before, but...
Not on ours, you did.
In 2020, when I was grieving the life I didn't think I was going to get, it was almost like I was grieving Nick, like... the love I didn't get to have or something, you know? And during that year, I really sat with myself. I really understood what I truly wanted. And I like a teenager, I got a poster board from CVS. It was bright green. And I don't know, I thought pink was too gay, so I went with green.
Of course you did.
But I got all these magazines. But before I pasted all these really beautiful images, I wrote in detail, like a prayer, what I wanted in a partner and in a husband. And it was so articulate, and it covered the whole poster board. And then I put these really beautiful images, like a couple holding hands at the altar, and you know, sunsets and a table full of food, and you know, even this like emerald green tile, which is actually what we have in our bathroom now. Mm. It was just like colors and textures. And I would look at this vision board every morning. I woke up and every night before I went to bed, and I would just meditate, and I would pray to God and just pray that I would find that person. And this is funny because I let you read it once.
Oh yeah, no, I read
and
it.
You read the whole thing, and you were like, I have to say,
every single quality you wrote down, I possess. Like you almost described me.
I know,
and I was like, oh look, and you never wrote tall or mentally stable.
You said,
so you fucked up.
I know, I should have said mentally. You know what?
No, then you would have missed out.
I know, I wouldn't have. Yeah. Traded you for anything.
No, I did think that was great. I mean, wouldn't it just suck so bad if like you saw your partner's vision board and they describe
somebody else
like you?
It's like, wait, Allie was watching that movie the other day with Zach Galifianakis when they do the bank heist.
Oh.
And the Kate McKinnon character, she's like, and I was very, 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 very in love. And I was in it or something, like talking about her fiance, and then he died.
And then I met Zach.
But she was like with her.
Right.
New
her husband
fiance.
Was sitting right there.
Yeah, her husband was sitting, or soon to be husband.
It's a movie called Masterminds.
That's right.
It's not bad. Yeah, man. And so, you know, at least one listener wanted to hear that story. And now you have.
Now you have. It's so fun. Oh.
Yeah, that's how that happened.
Thanks for giving us the opportunity to tell this story again.
Yeah, and I hope. I don't know. At least that one listener got something out of this. And, you know, the world is cynical and it's tough. And there's a lot of nihilism floating around these days. And so if this helps at all, anybody out there to keep your chin up and to keep your eyes and your heart open, it can happen. And all it takes, really, no matter where you're at, or what you've been living through, or what your history is, all it takes is one day to turn it all around. Because that is what happens when something great happens to you, is it retroactively redeems the life you had before. Because everything was leading up to this.
Yeah, and don't believe the cynicism, you know? I said to Nick in our vows at the altar, I said it could only be you. And it's the truth. And yeah, as someone who really thought that this was for other people, a part of me also had so much faith. And you just stick with it, guys.
I didn't. I see. And to me, I was like, that's the kind of thing that exists for other people, not for someone like me. And okay, I have some consolation prizes. I get to do some stuff that most people don't do.
Sure.
But
you can also have great love too.
But I walk alone. Like that's my thing, is I walk alone. And in relationship or out
of
it.
I felt like that
I'm alone.
Yeah.
And then I wasn't.
Yeah. Here we are.
Yeah. God love you.
God love you.
He does.
God with you.
And also with you.
Well, we'll catch you next time, guys.
Yeah.
Be well. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
All that stuff.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.